Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13, Text Number 11. Kvachit cha sita atapavartavarsha pratikriyam kartam anisha aste kvachit mita vipanan yat cha kinchit videsham richati uta vitasatyat vachit chachita tapavata varsha prati kriyam karta manisha aste Chinmito vipananyats chakinchi. Vivesham richati uta vitta satyat. Vivesham richati uta vitta satyat. Chitchachitata pavata varsha. Prati kriyam karta manisha aste. Achin mito vipananyat chakinche. Videsham richati uta vitta satyat. Achit chachita tapavata varsha. Prati kriyam karta manisha aste. Vachin mito vipananyat chakinchit. Vivesham richati uta vitta satyat.
Thank you.
Ladies? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sometimes the living entity is busy counteracting the natural disturbances of freezing cold, scorching heat, strong wind, excessive rainfall, and so forth. When he is unable to do so, he becomes very unhappy. Sometimes he is cheated in business transactions one after another. In this way, by cheating, living entities create enmity amongst themselves. Sometimes the living entity is busy.
Sometimes the living entity is busy.
Counteracting the natural disturbances.
Counteracting the natural disturbances.
Of freezing cold.
Freezing cold.
Scorching heat.
Scorching heat.
Strong wind.
Strong wind.
Excessive rainfall and so forth.
When he is unable to do so,
he becomes very unhappy.
Sometimes he is cheated in business transactions,
one after another. In this way, by cheating,
living entities create enmity among themselves.
Purport. This is an example of the struggle for existence, the attempt to counteract the onslaught of material nature. This creates enmity in society, and consequently, society is filled with envious people. One person is envious of another, and this is the way of the material world. The Krishna Consciousness Movement aims at creating an atmosphere of non-envy, Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious. But the Krishna consciousness movement can create an exemplary society wherein there is no envy. Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Dham Sachivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitavascha. Hey Krishna Karna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Pre Vanchaka Patarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasai Gaur Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Sometimes living entities busy counteracting the natural disturbances of freezing cold, scorching heat, strong wind, excessive rainfall, and so forth. When he is unable to do so, he becomes very unhappy. Sometimes he is cheated in business transactions one after another. In this way, by cheating, living entities create enmity among themselves. So for several months now, here in Sridhar Mayapur, we have been involved in this pastime. And I thought, because so many of us are new, have just arrived in Mayapur, we could just briefly give an overview to get a context for this particular verse that we're reading today. So we can go back to Maharaj Rishabhdev, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was the emperor of the world in days of yore. And he had 100 very exalted sons, the chief of whom was Bharat Maharaj. So when Rishabhdev retired to the forest to achieve spiritual perfection, he entrusted the kingdom, the empire, to this Bharat Maharaj, who was extremely qualified. In fact, this planet, Srila Prabhupada says, is named Bharat Varsha, after this Bharat Maharaj. So after ruling very successfully, keeping the citizens happy and prosperous, Bharat Maharaj also retired. He left his family, he left his enormous kingdom, and he went to the forest, as his father had done previously, to try to attain spiritual perfection. And he was successful. Prabhupada describes that he was experiencing the 8 kinds of emotions that one experiences when one is feeling love for Krishna. But unfortunately, as fate would have it, he became attracted to a baby deer, a helpless infant deer, and attracted to such an extent that this deer interrupted his devotional service. And when he was actually searching for the deer, he had an accident and passed away thinking of this deer. And we know from Bhagavad Gita, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, that whatever one thinks about at the time of death, that state that person will attain without fail. So this exalted personality, Maharaj Bharata, became a deer. But he was not a usual deer. By the grace of Krishna, he could remember his previous life. And actually, in his deer body, he left his family and went back to the ashram where he had been practicing devotional service. And there he associated with the sages. So when he left that body, he did not have to transmigrate through one body after another, as deer would have to do ordinarily before they reached the human form of life. But rather, he was immediately transferred to the womb of a Brahmin woman, and he became born in a high Brahmin family. But again, he was blessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he could remember his previous lives. So in this birth, he was called Jadbharat. And this chapter is called Rahugana Converses with Jadbharat. So this word Jad means stone-like. He did not want to again make the same mistake that he had made previously as Bharat Maharaj and become attached to anything material. So he pretended, or externally, he appeared dull and foolish. So much so that his brahminical father, as hard as he would try to teach Jadbharat, Jadbharat would not learn, apparently. And in this state, he had many adventures, which we have read about previously. And one adventure, which brings us closer to the place where we are now, was that a king named Rahugana was passing by, and he needed a palanquin carrier for his palanquin. And they pressed Jadbharat into that service, which was entirely unsuited for a Paramahamsa. But he took it in a humble way, that this is my karma. And he began to carry the palanquin of Rahugana Maharaj. But he did not carry it as the other palanquin carriers were carrying it, because Jadbharata did not want to step on any ants. So he carried this palanquin of the king in a very irregular way, to the point that the king was disturbed and upset. And he tried to correct Jadbharat with strong words. And then they continued carrying the palanquin, and Jadbharat carried it as he had been, avoiding stepping on the ants. And Rahugana Maharaj became angry. And with very insulting, sarcastic words, he chastised Jadbharat. And in fact, he said that if he did not carry the palanquin properly, he would punish him with corporal punishment. In fact, he said he would send him to the king of Yamaraj, kingdom of Yamaraj. So at this point, apparently for the first time in Jadbharat's life, he revealed his exalted stature as a Vaishnava, a Paramahamsa Vaishnava. And he responded to each and every one of the king's accusations and sarcastic words and insults with transcendental knowledge. It wasn't a long talk. It was only, in the Bhagavatam, it's only 5 verses that he speaks. But Rahugana Maharaj is a pious king. And when he hears this transcendental knowledge from the lotus mouth of Jadbharat, he gets down from his palanquin and he offers his prostrated obeisances at the feet of Jadbharat, his palanquin carrier. And he profusely apologizes for insulting him and speaking in such strong words to him and being angry at him. And then he says, you know, I've heard what you've said, and I appreciate that it's exalted knowledge, but still I'm confused. He said, Jadbharat has said, the soul is not actually fatigued. Rahugana Maharaj was speaking sarcastically to him. He was young and strong. And Maharaj Rahugana said, oh, you must be very tired that you're not carrying the palanquin properly. And Jadbharat, in his response, he said, actually, the soul does not feel fatigue. Only the body feels fatigue. So then Maharaj Rahugana, after he apologizes and offers obeisances, he's trying to understand the knowledge. And he said, surely, the body and the soul are connected, so surely the soul must feel fatigue. Surely the soul must feel pleasure and pain. And also, Jadbharat has mentioned to him that in this birth, he was the king and Jadbharat was the servant. But in another birth, the roles could reverse. Jadbharat could be the king and this Rahugana could be the servant. So Rahugana accepted that, but he said, right now I am the king. So isn't it my responsibility to rule the citizens? Shouldn't I punish them if they misbehave? So in this way, he had these questions. And in his response, Jadbharat gave a more full explanation. He began in a way that's very similar to the way that Krishna spoke to Arjuna. and that he chastised them. We know Krishna said to Arjuna, you are speaking learned words, but actually a wise person does not grieve the way you are grieving. A wise person doesn't grieve for the living or the dead. You are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. So in this way, indirectly, Krishna calls Arjuna a fool. So in a similar way, Jayaparat responded to Maharaj Rurugana, and he said, you're speaking like a very experienced person, but actually you are completely inexperienced. And he explained why. He said, a person who's experienced, a transcendentalist, that person does not care for social behavior that sacrifices spiritual advancement. That person does not care for social behavior that sacrifices spiritual advancement. In other words, for the transcendentalist, the actually experienced person, the foremost concern is spiritual advancement. Social behavior is secondary. So it seems that Maharaj Rurugana, not only had he abused verbally Jayaparat, but also he was not treating his other palanquin carriers fairly. He pressed them into service and there was no remuneration, they were not getting paid, they were like slaves. So in this way he was not benefiting his subjects, and Jayaparat pointed that out to him. Then Jayaparat started to speak about the mind, and he said that the soul's designation, the mind, is the cause of all tribulations and anxieties in this world. We know Lord Krishna says a similar thing to Arjuna. He says the uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the living entity. And even Prahlad Maharaj, when he's speaking to his father, Hiranyakashipu was a great demon. And we know that demons think they have so many enemies. They think, oh, he is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemy will also be killed, and I will live very comfortably. I'll be powerful and happy. But Prahlad Maharaj disagreed with that idea. He said, actually, every living entity has only one enemy, and that enemy is the uncontrolled and misguided mind. Save for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy in this world for anyone. So in this way, the mind is extremely powerful. We have seen that in the case of Bharat Maharaj, it was due to his mind that he was carried to this body of a deer. That is the power of the mind. So one may ask, well, what is this mind that is so formidable? And Krishna explains in the Gita that he has separated external energies, and he names eight. There are five that are gross: earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and three that are subtle: mind, intelligence, and false ego. And beyond these, there is the living entity, the jiva. Each and every one of us is a jiva. And the jiva tries to use the resources of this external energy to exploit them for its own pleasure, for its own enjoyment. And Srila Prabhupada explains this. He says the soul is pure. The soul is uncontaminated. But what happens is, when the soul gets entangled in this material world, it gets involved with the false ego. The false ego wants to lord it over this material nature. And at that time, when the mind gets involved with the false ego, the functions of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, are used to try to lord it over Krishna's energies. Therefore, the living entity becomes entangled in this material world by this association with the false ego by the mind. This is our problem. And Jayaparat explains to Maharaj Rurugana that one who follows this path, follows the dictation of the false ego, trying to enjoy and control Krishna's external, inferior nature, that person is doomed. He uses the word doomed. Why? Because we simply chase after the objects of our senses. life after life. It may be different species of life, it may be different planets, but we're simply chasing after the objects of the senses. So it's a grievous, unhappy situation. And Jagrat compares this uncontrolled mind to an uncontrolled elephant. If there's a wild elephant who's independent, there's no elephant keeper around, you can imagine the fearsome situation. And he also says that whatever pleasures come by contacting the senses with their objects, it's insignificant. Because we are spiritual beings. We want spiritual pleasures. Jagrat gives the example of a dream. And if I'm very hungry and thirsty, and I fall asleep in that state, feeling hungry and thirsty, I may dream that I'm drinking wonderful beverages, that I'm eating a very wonderful, well-prepared meal. I may even dream how satisfied I am. But when I wake up, I'm still hungry and I'm still thirsty. So in the same way, since we're not these material bodies, since we're spiritual beings, we require spiritual pleasures. And in this material world, whatever pleasure there is will not actually satisfy us as spiritual beings. It's simply a dream, and it's temporary. It doesn't last. Therefore, we're told, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Lord Chaitanya is imploring us, please wake up. Wake up to this higher spiritual pleasure, because that is our actual nature. Also in the Gita, we find that Krishna says that intelligent persons do not engage in the sources of misery, which is contact between the senses and the sense objects. They know that such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so they do not delight in them. And it's interesting, when Prabhupada comments on this verse, he refers to a verse spoken by Maharaj Rishabhdev to his son, all his sons, but also Jad Bharat, to formerly Jad Bharat, Bharat Maharaj. Before Rishabhdev Maharaj retired to the forest, he instructed his sons, and this is one famous verse, Nayam Deho Dehabhajan Riluke. He says to his sons, you have this very valuable human form of life. Do not work hard for sensual pleasures, for bodily pleasures. This is not what the human life is meant for. Why? Well, if you look around, you will see that even the animals, the hogs, the stool-eating hogs, they also enjoy sensual pleasures, and they don't labor so hard. So one may say, well, what should I be doing? And Maharaj Rishabhdev responds. He says, execute penances and austerities to purify your life, to come to the transcendental destination of eternal happiness, eternal knowledge, eternal blissfulness. This is his instruction. So as Bharat Maharaj heard that, and now he's giving the same knowledge to his student, Rahugana Maharaj, after several births later. So Rahugana Maharaj is very appreciative of this knowledge. Last week, Akuti Prabhu gave a class, and she mentioned in this regard that for those of us who try to introduce Krishna consciousness to people in the West, we would be ecstatic to find somebody like Maharaj Rahugana, who actually heard what we had to say and tried to understand it with their intelligence and responded with good questions. Because in the West, more often than not, people are too busy to listen and they have so many arguments and resist even after they're been given so many reasons why Krishna consciousness is a path that can help them. They still resist. So Maharaj Rahugana was not like that at all. Rather, he told Jad Bharat that I had been bitten by the serpent of ignorance, the serpent of pride, and that venom was in my body. But by hearing your nectarian words, I have been relieved from the fever produced by that venom. He was so appreciative. But also he was a little bit disturbed because he wanted to understand more fully the knowledge that Jad Bharat had given. So Jad Bharat explained at that point, he began by talking about the subtle energy of the Lord, the mind, And now he talked about the gross energy. And he said that on this planet, there's so many different species of life. And all of them are made from earth. Whether it's the human body, or a tree body, or a beast body, or a bird body, they're all made from earth, and they're temporary. As it said in the Bible, from dust we have come, and unto dust we shall return. So in this way, it's transitory, these particular bodies. And he compared it, Jedburgh compared it to a potter. A potter takes clay, which is nothing but earth, and he shapes it into so many different forms. You have those beautiful jugs that they use to collect the date grass. You have little cups for drinking. They're pots for flowers. But eventually all those are used, and then they return to the earth. So we shouldn't take this body as something so significant. And at the end he suggests, when he was talking about the mind, because he was talking to Kshatriya, he told Maharaj Rahugana that with the sword of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, control your uncontrolled mind. And now, after talking about the body, he says, with the sword of knowledge, cut your attachments to this illusory material world. And then, out of his kindness, Jagannath speaks a very wonderful figurative story, which is what we're reading right now. It's an analogy, a very lengthy analogy. And he talks about a merchant. Merchant in Sanskrit is vanik. So this merchant leaves his home and he comes to a forest and he's looking for things that he can collect in that forest to sell and make a profit. So figuratively, each of us is this vanik, this merchant, in that we're souls, and we've left our original home, we've come to this material world, which is the forest, and we're looking here for things that we can enjoy. But the problem is that in this forest, this vanik, this merchant, has difficulty. First, he's plundered, and those plunders are compared to the senses. The eyes want to see something beautiful, the ears to hear, a sense of touch, and those expend whatever little profit he's gotten. He expends it on those plunderers. And then there's jackals. Jackals are compared to relatives, and they also have so many desires. They also have their senses to satisfy. And so these jackals come, and they also take away the little profit this poor merchant has gathered from the forest. Beyond that, there are mosquitoes. The forest has so many mosquitoes. These are compared to envious people, constantly biting. And crickets. Crickets refer to people who are backbiting. Then there's a well. He jumps into a well. This is like incurable diseases. This very deep well. So in this way, he creates so many analogies. And the living entity is suffering this way, is looking for relief. But instead of relief, some man-eating rakshasas come, carnivorous rakshasas. And these are compared to the tax collectors from the government. And they take so much of this poor merchant's wealth that he loses his enthusiasm. He almost loses his life. He is so discouraged by this gouging by the government. What to do? And he looks for shelter. It says that he jumps into a shallow river, and that shelter that he's seeking is the blessings of the atheists. A shallow river where he simply hurts himself. And still seeking shelter, he comes and looks to crows and vultures and herons. And these are compared to pseudo-swamis, pseudo-yogis, pseudo-transcendentalists. And they can give him no help. They're just insignificant birds. There's no way that they can help him. So basically, the living entity is miserable. And here, this is a continuation. Today's verse is a continuation. So he's busy counteracting the natural disturbances of cold, heat, and so forth. This is a very interesting word, counteracting. The Sanskrit is pratikriyam. And we find in Bhagavad Gita, again, Krishna also speaks about the suffering of this material world. Mutras Parshas Chakamta Satosna Sukadukada. It's the same word. Sita means winter. And Krishna, he says, just as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, they come and go like winter and summer, tolerate those. Tams Tatikshas Vibharata. He doesn't talk about counteracting them. This idea of counteracting, this is the materialistic idea that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, therefore I counteract these miseries. But one who has transcendental knowledge knows that I'm not meant for this world. I'm meant for a higher place. And I don't counteract, I tolerate. And this counteracting, patikrama, we see that in the world today. They're trying to counteract miseries, and the result of that is that our planet is becoming less and less inhabitable. There are cities now where you become injured by breathing the air. There are many places, most places in the world, you can no longer drink the water. We eat food and we don't know what chemicals we're ingesting with those vegetables and grains. This is trying to counteract the miseries instead of tolerating them. We're meant to tolerate. Also, in this regard, these natural disturbances are so grievous. So we find today we're celebrating Varaha Dvadasi. So Varaha, as we see in this beautiful diorama, he defeated Hiranyaksha. When Hiranyaksha and his brother were born, Hiranyakashipu, Prabhupada mentions how many natural disturbances there were. There was actually earthquakes and meteors and immense darkness. And Prabhupada says that when demons are born, these natural disturbances occur. And now that more and more demons are being born, there are more and more natural disturbances. I'm from America, so I keep a little track of what's happening in America. And this last winter, there was devastating cold. It went all the way to the south, to Alabama. Sometimes we talk to my son-in-law, he's in Washington, D.C. area. He was saying, oh, it's 8 degrees Fahrenheit, which is well, well below freezing. Completely unheard of cold for that part of the world. Plus, not only was it 8 degrees Fahrenheit, I'm sorry, I don't know what that makes centigrade, but it's very, very cold. But there are winds that reduce the temperature even more, so much suffering. Also, a significant point in this verse, prior to this, this poor Vanak, this poor merchant, was wandering in the forest and simply suffering from the mosquitoes, from the plunderers, from the jackals, from the crickets. But now he's responding in this verse and the previous verse and the next verse. We'll see there's a little change. That now this living entity is losing his integrity. In the previous verse, he's getting involved in illicit sex life outside his married home. He's searching after a debauched woman. Here he's being cheated, and he's starting to cheat. And in the next verse, we'll see that he steals. What an unfortunate reaction to misery. This is the reaction of an impious person. Actually, a pious person suffering misery, they'll turn to Krishna, they'll turn to God. An impious person, they take to more and more sinful activities, and that only increases their ignorance. And as they have more ignorance, they're more inclined to sin. So it becomes a downward spiral. Very serious situation. And here in the purport, Prabhupada speaks at length about envy. One person is envious of another, and this is the way of the material world. So it's a fact of life that because we have material desires, therefore, we're envious of others because we think they've fulfilled their desires better than I have. If only I had their looks, their knowledge, their wealth, whatever, you can add almost anything, you know, their fame, their popularity, then I would be happy. And therefore, there's this envy which eats away at the heart. Krishna says that he spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna because Arjuna was anasuyave. He was not envious. That was his qualification. And also the sages who heard Srimad Bhagavatam, They were not envious. So this envy is very detrimental for spiritual advancement. And we can understand it. Now, whatever we have, whatever body we're in, whatever assets we have and abilities, this is God's arrangement for us. It is not an accident. It is due to our previous activities, to the choices that we've made, and is perfect in and of itself. And whatever anyone else has, that is due to their activities and their choices. There's no reason to begrudge them of that. But see it as Krishna's arrangement. So with that idea, with a humble idea, that what I have is my lot in life, and to be contented with that. If we're contented, then we don't compare ourselves to others. It is that comparison that creates the problem. If we don't compare ourselves to others, we can be free of this degrading feeling, this resentful longing and discontent for what others have. Rather, we can rejoice in it. If you think that we have a huge garden, and each of us is a gardener, and what we're trying to do is raise flowers and fruits and vegetables for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, for the pleasure of Srila Radhamadava, then if someone comes with a beautiful fruit that they've raised in this garden, we should feel great joy. And we can help them with our role, as they can help us with their role. And so in this way, collectively, in a spirit of cooperation, we can serve Krishna together and avoid this envy. So part of the way to overcome envy is to be absorbed in whatever service we have. Each of us is unique. A unique individual, just as each person's face is different from every other face. There are no two alike. Even some of us can tell Jananivas apart from Pankajanagri. Sometimes. We each have different fingerprints. Each of us is unique. So we have a unique way in which we can serve the Lord and please Him. And this idea of big or small, that's not relevant to Krishna. He's looking for the attitude. He's looking for the surrender, for the mood of service. This is what gives him pleasure. And what also gives him pleasure is this cooperative service that we can help each other. Rather, envy is a disqualification. And it's actually ironic. Envy is ironic because we want this asset, this quality, to be happy. But the very fact that we're envious means that we're unhappy. We're discontented. Envy itself makes us unhappy. We want this to be happy. We're unhappy by desiring it. Not only that, but if we were to get that thing, if we were to get that wealth, or that popularity, or that knowledge, we would still not be satisfied because the problem is the material desire. As long as the material desire is there, whatever we have, we'll want more. As Maharaj was saying the other day, it's a matter of greed. And it's not satisfied. So in this way, these are some points. When he heard this from Jadbharat Maharaj, Rahugana responded, and he said that by your association, the roots of material entanglement that I had been bound by have been cut. And those roots, he said, were arguments, false prestige, and a lack of discrimination. These are the roots of material entanglement. And the association of the saintly soul, Jadbharat, cut those roots. So Maharaj Rahugana was so much appreciative. Ordinarily, at this point, we'd have a discussion, but today, being Varaha Dvadasi, I thought we could discuss about Lord Varaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's described that Brahma, the very first created being in this universe, had this onerous task of filling the universe with a population of living beings. And it didn't go very smoothly for him. He first created, for example, the four Kumaras, and he wanted the four Kumaras to procreate, but they refused. They wanted to remain celibate. And this angered Lord Brahma to such an extent that Lord Shiva, Rudra, came. And Rudra started populating the universe, but He populated it with beings that were in the mode of ignorance, so Lord Brahma had to ask him to please cease and desist for now. And then, as the creative process went on, two beings were created, Satarupa and her husband, Svayambhuva Manu. And Lord Brahma was very relieved that these two beings agreed to populate the universe. And Svayambhuva Manu pointed out to Lord Brahma that the earth planet, which was suitable for living entities, it had fallen to the bottom of this Garbhodaka ocean. This was a problem. Lord Brahma looked, and indeed, while he had been involved in the process of creation, the earth planet had been deluged. And there it was at the bottom of this Garbhodaka ocean. What to do? So he was meditating, Lord Brahma was meditating what to do, and a very interesting point Prabhupada makes. He says that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead exhales, his exhalation is the Vedas. Now Lord Brahma was the first created being, and when he inhaled the Vedas. And now he was meditating what to do about the earth being in this bottom of this ocean. And when he exhaled, a small being came out in the shape of a boar. And that being was the personified Vedas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Varaha. And in a very short time, he grew to an enormous size, bigger than an elephant. And he roared. So we can read directly from the Bhagavatam about the beauty of Lord Varaha. This is, we're reading from Canto 3. Chapter 13, text 27, the appearance of Lord Varaha. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. Srila Prabhupada says, here are some of the transcendental features of Lord Boar. As the residents of the upper three planetary systems offer their prayers to the Lord, it is understood that his body expanded throughout the sky, beginning from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka. It is stated in Brahma Samhita that his eyes are the sun and the moon. Therefore, his very glance over the sky was as illuminating as the sun or the moon. The Lord is described herein as Mahidra, which means either a big mountain or sustainer of the earth. In other words, the Lord's body was as big and hard as the Himalayan mountains. Otherwise, how was it possible that he kept the entire earth on the support of his white tusks? And the translation. He was personally the Supreme Lord Vishnu and was therefore transcendental. Yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devoted brahmanas engaged in offering prayers. Thus, he entered the water. Prabhupada explains, we should always remember that although the body of a hog is material, the hog form of the Lord was not materially contaminated. It is not possible for an earthly hog to assume a gigantic form spreading throughout the sky, beginning from Satyaloka. His body is always transcendental in all circumstances. Therefore, the assumption of the form of a boar is only his pastime. His body is all the Vedas or transcendental. But since he had assumed the form of a boar, he began to search out the earth by smelling, just like a hog. The Lord can perfectly play the part of any living entity. The gigantic feature of the boar was certainly very fearful for all non-devotees, but to the pure devotees of the Lord, he was not at all fearful. On the contrary, he was so pleasingly glancing upon his devotees that all of them felt transcendental happiness. Diving into the water like a giant mountain, Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly, as if praying to the Lord. O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Lord Bor penetrated the water with his hooves, which were like sharp arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Lord Bor very easily took the earth in his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Prabhupada writes, the Lord can assume any form he likes, and in all circumstances he is the cause of all causes. Since his form is transcendental, he is always the supreme personality of Godhead, as he is in the causal ocean in the form of Mahavishnu. Innumerable universes generate from the holes of his bodily hairs, and thus his transcendental body is the Vedas personified. He is the enjoyer of all sacrifices, and he is the unconquerable supreme personality of Godhead. He is never to be misunderstood to be other than the Supreme Lord because of his assuming the form of a boar to lift the earth. That is the clear understanding of great sages and great personalities like Brahma and other residents of the higher planetary systems. Hare Krishna. All glories to Lord Varaha. All glories to his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Thank you so much for your attention. Hare Krishna.
Losing my lubrication.